Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Two of the First. It is Tuesday, May the 28th. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Thanks for being here. I didn't do really any kind of show over the last 5 days or so. I was out of town spending the weekend with my family and family from our kids' school. Had a great time in South Central Pennsylvania. Got to see Gettysburg, which I've never seen, which is kind of weird being 90 minutes from Gettysburg. Learned a lot about the history of that battle. I'm by no means a Civil War aficionado or any kind of war aficionado. That's just not my interest. But I did learn a lot, and it was really revealing, I thought. And then got to spend some time in the capital of Pennsylvania, Harrisburg. And then also went to Hershey Park, where I hadn't been probably 25 years. And it was a really, really nice weekend. Just spent time away from everything. And the place we were staying in really didn't have cellular service at all. We did have Wi-Fi, and it was a lovely place. It was just kind of remote, relatively speaking. So, on Saturday afternoon, I started getting a couple of text messages from friends asking about Grayson Murray, and I was not in tune at all what was happening with the golf tournament or anything golf news. And then, obviously, what came out, and that sent a shockwave through my system. Just absolutely stunning to find out that Grayson Murray had died. And so I wanted to just take a little bit of time and just do a very short, relatively speaking, episode just on this topic about Grayson Murray. And I've had a few days to think about it. The outpouring of support has been incredible for Grayson Murray, for Grayson Murray's family, for really anyone that supported him, that was a friend of his, his girlfriend, you know, stuff like that, fiance. And I can go a lot of different directions with this, but I didn't want to muddy anything up with a second topic, another topic. We can talk about that later. So, you know, the news comes out on Saturday afternoon, early morning, I guess, that Grayson Murray had died, that he had withdrawn from the Charles Schwab Challenge at Colonial with just a couple holes left in his second round, said he wasn't feeling well, and that's the last, at least presumably, unless otherwise communicated, that any tour player probably heard from Grayson Murray. Then the news gets out, and I think rightly or wrongly, a lot of people probably turned their thoughts to how did this happen, and probably did not assume just some kind of horrible accident. Probably assumed something more intentional than that. You know, Grayson has dealt with and has been open about, had been open about for a couple years now, his battle with substance abuse, alcoholism, his fight for better mental health, treatment options for PGA Tour players, something he was very candid about in social media. And yeah, I think that kind of led people probably down a path of assuming that you know, he had relapsed and something had happened in that relapse. And then we find out through his family statement. His family statement was heart-wrenching, incredible that they could put that together. Really. I mean, I don't know that I would have had that that in me. If one of my children were in the same situation, I don't know how I would even get out of bed the next day. I don't even know that I'd get into bed, to be honest with you. And their statement was remarkable, but revelatory in that they explained that he took his own life. He killed himself by suicide. And that's a hard one to take. I cannot imagine that. And I would very strongly recommend reading something that Gary Williams from Five Clubs, formerly of Golf Channel, presently of SiriusXM PGA Tour Radio, that he wrote about the struggles of alcoholism or substance abuse or substance addiction, and that every day is another battle. Every day is another struggle. It's not a disease with a cure. It's not a problem with a cure, except day by day, grinding it out, figuring it out, how to deal with it, how to not fall into the traps of substance abuse, to relapse, to confront mental health, to be honest with yourself, to be honest with other people. It was a really powerful piece. I read it a couple of times this weekend. I will probably read it a couple more. I don't have the understanding from firsthand experience of what that is like, what that pain must feel like. And I think it's important for people who have never felt that personally to have some kind of understanding of what someone like Gary or what someone like Grayson has gone through, is going through, may go through for the rest of their lives. Because as Gary alluded to, there's no cure. There's no panacea. There's no answer that says, all right, you'll never have to think about this ever again. It just doesn't go away. And that has to be incredibly ravaging. Because even when you're in a good place, even when things are going well, you're not that far away from it all turning negative, poorly, perhaps fatal. And that living on the edge kind of thing, and not living on the edge in a way of, you know, like a stuntman kind of thing, but living on the edge in the way of that you could be okay today and you could be beyond repair the next. That has to be anxiety-inducing. It has to be incredibly harrowing. And yet, Grayson Murray found a way to be open and honest about it, and at least for a time, a prolonged period of time, seemed to be succeeding. He had found a girlfriend that he had proposed to. He seemed to be a guy who was willing to be an advocate, not only for himself, and kudos to him for pushing back on the PGA Tour at the time when he did it on Twitter, but also an advocate for just other people who are going through this kind of thing. Of, hey, if you need someone to talk to, if you need someone who can maybe understand better what you're going through, I'm your guy. You know, don't even blink twice. Don't think twice. Just reach out. I'm here. I'm here to help you. That was incredibly admirable. And it's so disheartening that depression and substance abuse and everything that comes from those things can snap right back into place in such a short period of time that you can find yourself from one end of the spectrum of life to a terminal end. And I think my first thought on Sunday, once his parents put out the statement and explained that he had died via suicide, was, well, what could anyone have done? And I don't mean that from a blame standpoint. I don't mean that whatsoever. But what I mean is, what could we have known? What could anyone have known that would have indicated that Grayson Murray was intending to harm himself fatally? Or harm himself to the point that he didn't care if it was fatal? Because he may not have done it with the intention to kill himself. He may have done it with the intention to hurt himself, whatever it was. I don't know. So I don't want to assume that. But that was my first thought, is what could have gone differently? And Peter Malnati was playing with him for the first two rounds, and Malnati went on CBS and was breaking down, and he was very honest, and I would expect nothing less from him, that as professional golfers, there's kind of a, especially on the PGA Tour, there's an insularity, not a disregard, but a relative disregard for what your peers are going through. You're not on a team. There's not a shared outcome, right? So how much digging do you do on your opponent who can also be your friend? And if it's just a casual acquaintance kind of thing, how far do you take it? How many questions do you ask? Or do you just kind of let someone be? Because the reality of professional golf is that it is extremely difficult. It is mentally taxing on a daily basis. It's a grind if you're not one of the top 10 players in the world. And even then, top 10 players in the world do things that seem extremely bizarre to the outside in an attempt to maintain or gain an edge. And I'm sure every professional at some point, even the most gifted, even a Scottie Scheffler, even a Rory McIlroy, go into a headspace where they wonder if they're good enough, if they can achieve their dreams, if they're capable. They probably had some deep, potentially dark thoughts about that. And that's every professional golfer, because nothing in golf is permanent. It can be taken away from you from one round to the next. And so it's a tough existence. And you do a lot of it fundamentally alone. Even if you're married, you're fundamentally alone. Because you travel a lot. And a lot of that time is not with your family. I mean, if you do it in a way to protect yourself, maybe it is. But a lot of people do it without their family. A lot of people just go out and try to make a life on the road and then come home and they have kind of two lives, and that's hard to lead. And none of this is easy, even for the most mentally acute. I don't even know what the right word is, but someone who can really thrive in that kind of situation. Even that person, even those few people have gone through some really difficult days, some really trying times mentally to figure out how they can move past letdowns and if they'll get things back and how they, you know, how all that works, how you just stay above float, you know, how you float, how you get above stasis, you know, how you perform your best, how you handle your worst, all of those things. And Malnati was very honest about that and just kind of said, you know, at the end of the day, we need to kind of check up on one another. We're all humans. We're all humans after all. And he's right. I mean, something very revealing I thought that Robert McIntyre said a few weeks ago was that he thought the PGA Tour was such a lonelier place than the DP World Tour. The DP World Tour has an element of collegiality and friendship, and people will go out to dinners together and do things together, families and players. There's a sense of community that isn't there on the PGA Tour. And you either have to figure out how to make your own community, and that's why perhaps players have their own posses. You know, you've got your teacher, you've got your caddy, you've got your physio, you've got your mental game person. You have all these things, just as much because they are utilitarian, but also because they're emotionally relevant. It's another person to spend time with. It's another person to surround yourself with. And in that sense, they're performing a dual function. You're not paying them to be your friend, but you're paying them for their service, and they might just be your friend, sounding board, proxy family member in the meantime. And if you aren't in a place where you can hire that or seek to hire that or inclined to hire that, who knows? Who knows how you handle it all? And so you get back to Grayson, and it sounded like he was finding ways to deal with that. But again, as Gary noted in his piece, and I cannot recommend reading it enough, that just because you figured out today and the days before, it doesn't mean you've got tomorrow. And whatever it was, whether it was building, whether it was a sudden thing, I don't know. And I don't know what ultimately can be done to better accommodate players who may be going through those kinds of things. And I don't mean that necessarily for someone who has acknowledged they have it, have some kind of substance abuse issue or depression issue. Those things can be temporary. They don't have to be permanent. You can go through stretches of your life where, I promise you, if you went to a psychiatrist, they would tell you you were depressed, but 2 weeks later you may not be. I think we all go through those things in life, and we don't talk about them. Most people don't. Grayson Murray was a noted exception who was willing to talk about it and explain the depths of what they feel and how they've tried to reckon with it as best they can in a positive way. But, it's hard. I think it's hard for a lot of people, and this isn't a male or female problem, young or old. It's just hard for people to say they are not well. And I know people love the phrase, it's okay to say you're not okay, and that there is more positive talk about that than I've ever heard in my lifetime is a good thing. It's absolutely a good thing. But I still don't think that has become a pervasive thought. We are often taught to suck it up, deal with it, keep it to ourselves, and move on. And that's true of external trauma, how we interact with one another, or how things happen to us in life, but also internal trauma. I'm sure it is not a good thing. It's at a minimum a scarring thing when you reach a point where you, of desperation, of anxiety, of deep struggle, and you don't want to talk about it because you just want it to be normal. You just want, just assume that this is just how it is. And I wish we were better at that. I wish we were all better at that. And I do want to tell people, there are people, this is important, and you can try to deal with this however you would like in life, but it is very valuable to open up. And I think we have become a society of people that are trying to say it's okay to not be okay, but at the same time, we don't have the best answer on how to then deal with that. Go talk to somebody. Go seek some professional help. Go talk to someone you love. Go talk to your spouse. Go talk to your parents. I don't think we know the right answer to that for every individual, right? Not every human being is equipped to handle that burden, or what might seem to them as a burden as opposed to an opportunity to be a difference maker. Some people are just really bad at handling stress, much less someone else's. And they, if you went to them with your problem, they may not be able to give you the best solution. They may not be able to give you the, to assuage you, to build confidence in you, to potentially point you in the right direction. And that can be just as damaging as saying nothing and not never having that conversation. And I think this is an opportunity for us to find that out about ourselves, to have that self-examination of if a friend, if a family member, if a spouse came to you with this problem, this level of desperation, how would you handle it? Could you handle it? Could you make it better? Could you make it worse? Is for the person you love the best answer to put them to a professional, get them to professional help? Is it to put your arm around them and take them to professional help? Is it to, I mean, there are probably a million things, but what's the best path for the people that you love if they're going through it? What's the best path for you? What do you want? What do you want to hear? What do you think you need to hear? Because that's important too. It's an important part of knowing yourself and speaking up for yourself when things go right and when things go terribly wrong. And to just be able to say, hey, I just from you right now, I just need you to listen. I just need you to hold me. I just need you to smile and tell me it's going to be okay. I need you to call somebody and find professional help. Whatever those answers are, however you think you can handle, you know, someone can help you handle that situation. If you're ever in that spot, please do not leave your care entirely in the hands of someone who may not know what works best for you or what could work best for you. Be it, as Grayson was, be an advocate for yourself. Only you know the depths of what you think and feel, and only you know what makes you feel the total opposite of that, the highest of highs, the best of the best. And as much important part of treatment of this type of thing, of anything, is knowing yourself. So please take the time to spend on that. And I was very moved by what Harry Higgs had to say. He won the Visit Knoxville Open on the Corn Ferry Tour, second win in a row. He's going back to the PGA Tour. He's won $360,000 the last 2 weeks. He knows he's got a job for next year on the PGA Tour. That's a tremendous accomplishment and an important moment in his professional career. And yet, he wanted to take the time in speaking to the folks who stuck around for the trophy presentation about how important it was to spend some time thinking about how we treat each other. And that he challenged everyone, and himself included, to do two things each day. One, say something nice to someone you love, and say something nice to someone you don't know, a stranger. Because you never know what that's going to mean to somebody. And, man, I completely agree with that. You never know the difference you can make just by being decent, just by being nice and observant and helpful. And I will say the same thing, to say that, just ask if someone's okay. If they don't look okay, maybe you asking them genuinely could be the difference, could be the moment they need to just get something off their chest, or to open themselves up, to bear out their soul. And that might not mean a 2-hour conversation with tissues on the couch, but it could mean, hey, if this person cares, surely someone else does. Even in a passing moment, I'm going to go, I'm loved, I matter, even if this person cares. Yeah, it's worth it to be nicer to one another. I spend so much time, at least I feel like I spend a lot of time as a parent, trying to explain how my children's actions make other people feel. And like, I'm very proud of my children. They are good kids. They have great manners and they're very thoughtful. And I've told them repeatedly, the most important thing I want for you is to be happy and healthy and to be able to understand other people with empathy. Because you never, again, we say this all the time, you never know what other people are going through. And that is resoundingly true. But it doesn't stop there. Just because you know that you don't know, that doesn't excuse you from taking the next step. Just because you can say, I don't know what you're going through. Well, you can try. You can try. Try to understand other people. Try to understand their struggles. Try to understand what they might be going through that you yourself someday may go through. Maybe not the same way, but a different way. And if you can be empathetic and view life through that lens of, would you want to be treated this way? What is it like on the other side of this conversation? Then there's a better chance that we treat each other better. There's a better chance that we identify in one another when things are going wrong, when someone needs to just hear something right, when someone needs something much deeper than that to get through the day. So, yeah, I completely agree with Harry and what he had to say about the importance of empathy, the importance of just being a lifeline, being a potential. You never know the difference that you can make. And I've probably heard this many times over the years, so I don't know who to properly attribute this to. But people don't really remember what you say to them. They remember how you make them feel. And if you can make someone feel loved and appreciated and noticed and seen and important, all those words, if you can make them feel those words, then you've done something. And that doesn't necessarily have to imply that you have to save their life or save them from self-harm or any of those types of things. But just simple actions like that can layer upon one another. It could be a defense, however you want to envision it. But those simple things can layer upon one another and build into something so important for those of us who feel like they've got the best defenses and those of us who feel like they've got none. And we're all going to need them someday. I just kind of wanted to put that out there. And I think that there's an opportunity for introspection about how people are treated publicly. I mean, Grayson was not without his public controversies. And I don't think we ultimately are supposed to just excuse things that we don't agree with in retrospect. But maybe perhaps better try to understand why they happen. And that, again, that's where empathy comes from. Of, yes, yeah, someone did something you don't like. Why did they do that? We have a tendency to take things personally or assume the worst about people, that they're just bad, irredeemable, that this is who they are, and that they're incapable of change or maturation. And so we tend to coldly corner them and then just wait and leave them there, turn our back on them. And if we perhaps did a better job in the moment and over time of understanding someone's maturation, of patterns in their actions, of what they say and who they do and how they evolve as people, and give them the space to do that, to not so quickly condemn them, but to understand that they are a product of so many things and that they are more than just their worst moment. They are more than their biggest embarrassment, their worst failure, then maybe that's a good place for everyone to start. Just as the same level as, you know, especially in my line of work, the same level as what Harry said of just be the difference. Don't be so quick to judge. Maybe say something nice. Have an understanding tone. And we can have fun. We can make light of things. I think that's important to be able to laugh at that kind of stuff. The horrible things that we can do as people, that somehow we kind of get through those things by making light of others. And if you can make light of yourself, that's equally important. But going through that process of reacting and understanding somebody, maybe a little bit more than the cursory level, would probably help. So my hope is that, and I just hope we do a little bit better. Just do a little bit better. To each other, by ourselves, just do a little bit better. And if we can do that, then that's the best tribute you can pay to somebody, I think, is to just be better. And maybe do it inspired by them, maybe do it in their honor, but get a little bit better every day, and hopefully we can do that together. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the show. Thank you for listening. If you made it this far, I appreciate it. To be totally candid, as much of this is a monologue that I'll saying to myself, as it is something I hope you'll listen to. And might come back to it sometimes. All right, we will next time talk about things more related to golf. And we'll start doing our live shows on YouTube and X and Twitter and that good stuff. And we'll talk U.S. Women's Open this week. We'll talk Canadian Open this week. Talk a little bit about Richard Bland winning on the Senior PGA Championship and what that implies, and lots of those types of things. But if you ever need someone to talk to, if you don't feel comfortable talking to somebody else, my DMs are open. My email is ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. You can find me on any social media service at the handle Ryan Ballingy. I will happily answer your message. Good, bad, or indifferent, I will happily answer your message. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next time on Two of the First.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.